Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guests today are Dr. Richard Price, CTO of Pragmatic Semiconductor, and Dr. Kostas Yordanou, an ASIC designer at Pragmatic Semiconductor. Richard has over 25 years experience in the development and commercialization of a wide range of new technologies based on novel processes, materials, and flexible electronics. Richard is also a non-executive director at the Henry Royce Institute, the UK's National Institute for Advanced Materials Research. Kostas is a senior ASIC designer working on pioneering projects that push the limits of flexible IC technology. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard, can you give us some background on your company, you know, the company pitch per se?
Sure. So the business is about 13 years old. We originally set up in Cambridge in England, and we developed a technology, which I'll talk about a little bit later, for manufacturing flexible integrated circuits. We now have our facility in Cambridge where we do a lot of our design and applications development, and we have a manufacturing facility in Northeast England. That's about 200 miles north of our Cambridge facility where we do manufacturing. We're venture funded. We've just recently closed a Series D investment at the end of last year, which was several hundred million dollars of investment into the business to allow us to continue expanding our manufacturing capacity in the UK. And we have about 300 people across the business in design, applications, commercial, and through into our technology development and production as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's interesting. Pragmatic isn't your standard semiconductor manufacturer. So can you tell me what's different about your Flex IC technology?
Well, I guess, first of all, we're not using a silicon or rigid wafer. We make something that is inherently or natively flexible. It's about 30 microns in thickness, so it's bendable and flexible. We're really revolutionizing semiconductor fabrication with something that in a lot of applications is very low cost and flexible. So we make these flexible integrated circuits, or flex ICs. And this allows you to start to embed intelligence really into places where it's not currently possible, even down to the item level. And we've developed a manufacturing process that takes only 48 hours. So if you compare that to your standard kind of silicon manufacturing, a lot of people listening to this podcast will, you know, recognize lead times in the months, or in some cases even longer than that. And what we've developed is much more sustainable because we have these very short process times and total cycle time. We use a lot less water and a lot less energy in our process. So we're really orders of magnitude more sustainable than a typical semiconductor manufacturing process. And one of the other advantages of this fast cycle time is that we can move from tape out of new designs to wafers out within a matter of days. And it's really changed the way that we approach, for example, design optimization. We're able to do a lot more optimization in the hardware, partly because the barrier to entry for design is so much lower, but also because we can take the approach that's perhaps more familiar for software development, where we can do multiple sprints or iterations of designs very closely spaced together to get to a better solution. And that really was sort of one of the underpinning things of this project that we're going to talk about later in the podcast.
Right. And you have something called tiny classifiers. Can you tell us how that work came about?
So the original work, I guess, was inspired by some collaborations that we'd had with Arm on a research basis. So there was a longstanding project that we worked together as a combined teams with Arm, and that was to demonstrate that we could use Pragmatic's Flex IC technology to implement an Arm microprocessor based on the Cortex-M0 platform. And we're able to successfully do that after a number of years working together. And that led to a publication in the Nature Journal. And then linked to that, we were working on another project, which also involved the University of Manchester here in the UK and Unilever, the global fast-moving consumer goods company. And that project at its heart was looking at the use of machine learning engines, specifically in this case for classification of different types of odors, and to be able to distinguish between essentially different levels of smell. And you could perhaps guess at some of the applications that Unilever were interested in, and maybe more so if I tell you that that project was called Plastic Armpit. But we were able to develop machine learning engines that had embedded algorithms on them that allowed you to distinguish between different levels of odors. And these are combinations of chemicals or volatile organic chemicals specifically. So things like ketones and amines in different mixtures. And these types of things you would also imagine have applications in, for example, quality of food. And you can distinguish between food that might be decaying over a different time period and then link that to quality of food and also to food safety.
All right, got it. You know, this is groundbreaking stuff. Can you give us an overview of the research?
Absolutely. Our work introduces an evolutionary algorithm. In other words, an iterative refinement process, right? To automatically generate hardware for tabular data classification. So in this work, we target specifically tabular data, one of the most common types of data in machine learning. Basically, tabular data are organized in rows and columns, where the rows represent observations and the columns represent attributes for those observations. So one of the key benefits of our work is that the classifier chip is extremely small in area, right? So that is fewer than 300 logic gates. And when this classifier implemented on a flexible substrate, such as FlexIC, this classifier occupies up to 75 times less area, consume up to 75 times less power, and has 6 times better yield than the most hardware efficient machine learning baseline. So the main highlight of this work is that we connect the ability of the proposed methodology to generate power and area efficient hardware for classification with the low cost fabrication of FlexICs. As Richard mentioned before, FlexICs are ultra thin and their simplified production process takes designs from tape outs to delivery in just 4 weeks.
Thank you, Kostas. You mentioned an evolutionary algorithm here. Can you tell us more about it? You know, how does it work in the context of FlexICs?
Sure. The core of our proposed work is the graph-based genetic programming approach, right? So this approach follows a traditional evolutionary methodology. So in more detail, let's say that we have a set of possible solutions, we call it the population, that are recombined, what we call crossover in machine learning world, and or perturbed. In machine learning terms, this process is defined as mutation. So the new candidate solution are then evaluated for their performance on a given task, right? So we are giving a score. Typically, this process referred to fitness. So after this step, the best performing children form the new population in the next iteration. Basically, this process mimics the natural Darwinian evolution, with the fitness acting as a selection pressure on the population and mutation and crossover operators introducing a variation. As a result, our proposed methodology automatically searches the classifier circuit space. At the end of this search space cycle, the output is a sea of logic gates, typically what we call a combinational circuit, which is auto-translated into RTL. And then this RTL is fabricated on FlexICs. It is important to mention here that during evolution, the generated circuit does not map to any predefined machine learning model or any known hardware circuit. The evolutionary algorithm starts from scratch.
Okay, so how do you go about creating hardware that can make predictions using this proposed methodology?
As we mentioned before, our methodology directly generates a visual representation of the classifier circuit from the training data and the user-defined input parameters, right? So input parameters could be the total gate count of the classifier, for example. In other words, how large the final design will be, or other parameters regarding the coding or quantization type of the input data. Then our evolutionary algorithm crawls on the design space using this training data and generates a simple graph, right? Where each node represents one logic gate. This graph then automatically translated into RTL. The auto-generated Verilog representation of a tiny classifier is read by conventional synthesis tool. And with that, we generate the netlist for a given technology. And then we produce the synthesized area, power, and timing reports for investigation. Of course, the full chip implementation requires additional steps beyond the normal process, such as floor planning, clock tree insertion, and other processes. But finally, the output of the flow is the generated chip layout. To complete the tape-out, we produce as well area, power, and timing reports of the full implementation.
Thank you, Kostas. So, Richard, what are the real-world applications for this technology?
So I think we're seeing a trend where there's more and more decision-making being moved out to the point of use. So there's trends like machine learning at the edge. And we see really this as an extension of that. So as I mentioned earlier, the ability to add item-level intelligence allows you to push out that decision-making even onto what are currently inanimate objects like food packaging and maybe potentially medical devices as well. And we mentioned in the blog, there's scope to use this same kind of methodology to time series data like audio applications where, for example, you may pick up certain keywords and that wakes up your favorite digital assistant in the home as part of this connectivity of more and more objects to the internet and the interactivity of those on a machine-to-machine basis as part of the Internet of Things, or what's more broadly called the Internet of Everything. So we can see specific applications, as I mentioned earlier, in areas like food packaging and smart labels. We can also see into areas like medical patches, for example, a disposable patch that may be able to predict your risk of something like a heart arrhythmia, and then direct you to a physician to go and get further tests. And maybe that early prediction allows you to then treat certain conditions in a cost-effective way. Another example might be wound healing, where again, the ability to use the highly optimized hardware, the low power consumption in sensing could allow you to get information about whether a wound is healing in the right sort of way. And that might be indicative of chemicals that are being exuded by a wound, or pH or temperature, or all of these things. And that can allow healthcare practitioners then to have more information about whether or not to, for example, change a wound dressing, or whether something is healing in the right direction. And I think we'll see more and more of these types of applications, particularly built on the simplicity, the highly optimized nature of the hardware that's possible with this kind of approach, and the sort of increasing number of devices that are just going to get connected to the internet.
That's fascinating. Final question, Richard, how do customers normally engage with your company?
So we've got, I guess, three main ways in which we engage with customers. Primarily at the moment, we're operating as what you would recognize as a IDM or an integrated device manufacturer. And we've developed our own products in the area of radio frequency identification, specifically near field communication. So these are chips that can be built into smart labels that are readable with smartphones using the same communication protocol that's used on things like Apple Pay and Google Pay and so forth. We also have a foundry business where we have a process design kit, and we work with designers who are able to design new products and chips in our technology, and we can manufacture those on their behalf. And in the middle sort of third area, we work in collaboration with customers using what we call design services. And essentially that's where we're translating a customer's requirements into what that means in terms of circuit design. And we work with them to go through multiple iterations from prototype all the way through to product and then into high volume manufacturing.
Great. Appreciate your time, gentlemen. It was excellent conversation, and I look forward to working with you more on SemiWiki.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.